Governor Scott Walker joins us now for a candidate forum leading up to the May 8th primary. What are your questions for him? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 7:36 on this Wednesday, April the 25th. All week long, we have been featuring the candidates who are on the primary ballot on May the 8th for lieutenant governor and governor. We just heard from Arthur Cole Riggs, who says he is running as a progressive Republican against Governor Walker on May the 8th. Yesterday, we heard from Democratic candidate Kathleen Falk. Secretary of State Doug LaFollette and State Senator Kathleen Vinehout will join us tomorrow during this hour. And Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett will join us on Friday. Governor Scott Walker joins us now by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be with you.
Thank you very much for joining us. So why should voters re-elect you?
Well, a couple reasons. One, I think it's a real choice. Do we go backwards or forwards? Do we go back to the days of double-digit tax increases, billion-dollar budget deficits, and record job loss? Or do we take this positive foundation that we built together to move our state forward? And I think that's really what's at stake, going back in time, and not just back in time the way things were in Wisconsin, but even what we see in real time in Illinois, which I think is not at all where Wisconsin wants to go. I mean, their unemployment rate's 8.8% today. Ours is 6.8%. We still got a lot of work to do, but I think it's a clear choice. The other question, though, I think is just as big, if not bigger, and that is, for years, long before I was governor, I would hear people complained to me, didn't matter if it was a Democrat or Republican or anywhere in between, people would complain that at any level of government, at the local level, at the state level, in particular at the federal level, I get complaints that, you know, politicians run for office, they get in office, and then nobody seems to be willing to take on the tough choices. And I hear people say to me all the time, hey, we can see clear as day that something needs to be done to fix this situation. And all too often they were frustrated because politicians of both parties would fail to live up to taking on those challenges. People may not agree with every step of every action we've taken over the past 15 months, but I think there's no doubt, it's hard to argue that what we did wasn't about taking on those tough choices. And as I've argued, we tried to think more about the next generation than just the next election. And I think that's what people want people to do in politics. They want them to take on these tough challenges.
You ran on a pledge to create 250,000 private sector jobs, yet we are hearing reports that Wisconsin actually lost more jobs last year than practically every other state. Why is that happening?
Well, a couple things. One, the promise I made was to help the people of the state, because I don't think the government creates the jobs. The people of the state create 250,000 jobs, and I still think we'll get there, because our goal is by 2015. The measure that was reported today is in the last 12 months. So from March of 2011 through March of 2012 is where you're at loss. And it just coincides that, you know, January and February of last year were good numbers. We started to see at the peak of the protest and all the intensity last year, concerns by businesses and others as to what was happening in the state. And any business, particularly a small business, needs to have certainty. They need to have a sense of knowing what the climate's going to be like to make decisions, particularly if they're considering adding jobs. And obviously, it was shaken a bit last year. Now, we've seen the first 3 months of this year a net increase of 15,600 new jobs in the private sector in the first quarter of this year alone. We've seen the unemployment rate dip down this past month to 6.8%. It's the lowest it's been since 2008. So I believe we are turning the corner. We are moving things in the right direction. But the irony is, we saw the peak of this concern come up last spring, really starting in March, and that's where the comparison is, when you had people not only from Wisconsin but around the country coming in for protests. That, thankfully for everybody, concern died down by last year and flared up again in November when the recall was kicked off, but it is leveled off again. The irony is, a number of my opponents want to rehash that battle all over again, and I think that would just put us back in the same state of mind, having another big battle over that in the future, which I don't think is good for anybody, certainly for job creators who want to know what the certainty is. So I think it's an interesting contrast, even for those that may not, like you said, agree with everything or every step I've taken. I think there's a lot of discerning voters out there who realize if we really want to move forward, the last thing we want to do throw out the governor, throw out the lieutenant governor, bring in people who are going to rehash the same debate we've had over the past year and have it all over again, because I think that only puts us backwards into a fight that I don't think is good for anybody. I think we need to work on things that we worked on together. I mean, the interesting thing is, out of all the bills, the nearly 300 bills I signed into law this year, about 96% of them had bipartisan support. So there's still a few big issues you hear about that are highly partisan, but overwhelmingly, the things we've been working on together, particularly things when it comes to jobs, have been things that Democrats, Republicans, and for now the one independent in the legislature can work together on, and I believe that's really what's at stake. If we want to get the state working again, we've got to find a way to get past this battle, to move this state forward, and to refocus again on the things that we started out with, which were things that helped employers feel good and confident about adding jobs. I believe we will. I think you're going to continue to see a takeoff this year in particular. A couple indicators. It's not just a projection or one example or another. There's statistical evidence for that. 2 years ago in 2010, statewide survey of employers showed that only about 10% of our employers thought Wisconsin was in the right direction. Remember, 2008, 2009, 2010, our state lost 150,000 private sector jobs, and our unemployment rate peaked out over 9%. Now, we brought that down. The interesting thing is that survey was conducted again recently for 2012, and 94% of our employers surveyed now believe that Wisconsin's heading in the right direction, and a more recent survey even last week showed that 87% of the employers surveyed believe they're going to add jobs in 2012. So one of the biggest things I hear from folks is, let's get past the recall elections. Let's have the certainty of knowing what the future is going to be like in state government. And people are in a place, in a mood, where a lot of our small business leaders are ready to add more jobs, and I'm ready to move forward and help them out.
Governor Walker, what are you proposing in terms of limiting teacher salary raises this year using Act 10?
We're not proposing anything. The law very clearly says that the basis that local school districts have, the basis, the foundation of the starting point of where the pay's at. But school districts, there was a story today in the Milwaukee paper about one district that's actually using Act 10 reforms so that they can add increased salaries to school district employees, teachers, and others as well. So the reforms that we provided over the last year actually allow school districts to actually pay teachers more. The difference is now, unlike the past, they have the capacity to do that based on performance measures. Many districts are choosing not just one, but a series of things where they could pay their staff more, but they can pay it based on performance measures, not just on across-the-board contract-mandated scenarios. And so I think in the end, you're going to see a lot of districts. I was at one yesterday in northern Wisconsin. I was in Brown Deer the day before and talked to folks in Fond du Lac and other places where they use the reforms not only to save money but to preserve classroom positions, in some cases to add teachers. Many districts are looking to add money to set aside for merit pay performance-based incentives. That ultimately is what school districts can do because of what we did in our reforms.
Yeah. All right, so this Associated Press story says that you reshaped a rule to lower inflation-based raises that public unions can negotiate for teachers.
Well, we didn't reshape it. That's what the law is. It allows us to do that. The foundation upon which that is set is the only thing left to bargain collectively was the base salary. And the question mark that had to be interpreted is, what is the base salary? Is it where people started or where they were at any given day? Or was it, what is the base salary that a teacher or a local official or anybody else gets? In this case, it was applied to schools. School districts can say, here's the base, and if there are additional things you get for enhanced educational opportunities, continuing education, training, other things like that, they can compensate on their own. We don't dictate one way or the other. What they do is that they can compensate that. Many districts will add additional performance-based bonuses. But in most cases, my guess is that those schools will do it not just because someone got that additional training or education, but that they're applying it in the classroom. And again, that's the beauty of this, is those decisions are now left up to people who are elected at the local level by local taxpayers, not mandated by a state law that dictates to everyone at the local level what and how they can do things, but instead gives them the flexibility to use local community values to determine what they want to do, not only with their pay, but with their whole structure, how they set up staffing, how they set up their system, how they motivate their teachers and faculty. All those things are things that the local school districts now get to do instead of the state government or a handful of people because of state law.
Let's go to Russell in Green Bay. Hello, Russell.
Hello. Yes, Governor Walker. My question is basically, if breaking up the public unions was such a good idea, why didn't you campaign on it? And if you win the recall, what do you got in? What surprises do you have in store for us then?
All right.
In terms of winning the recall, you know, our plan is to continue doing things. For example, education reform I worked on with Dr. Tony Evers, the state superintendent of public instruction, where last March, we brought a group of folks together on a Read to Lead initiative. We've been working on that together. We've been working on educator effectiveness and on school and school district accountability. One of the other big things we're just beginning to roll out and preparing to act on over the next year is the tremendous changes in terms of the resources we have and how we deploy them for workforce training in the state. There's an awful lot of different programs, many of which are targeted towards the organizations that that staff up those, and not enough, unfortunately, from what we hear from employers, is going into getting skilled workers into the positions that are needed to fill the thousands of job openings that we have today. So we're going to put a greater focus on that. We've started with some of that with the Covenant Foundation and some of the efforts we've done to help our technical colleges with additional resources there to target particularly advanced manufacturing. And per the original question, I did talk about this. In fact, I think I'm the only governor in America that actually ran ads talking about the 5% and the 12% contributions that we asked for pension and health care, mentioning that I would do it myself, which I do actually pay a higher amount for my pension contribution than do state employees. But we talked about that. That's why AFT Wisconsin, one of the unions, actually ran flyers forecasting exactly what would have happened over the last year and pointing out to the members that they disagreed with that. That's, you know, that's their right. That's their prerogative. But that was run before the election because we talked about these things. For me, it was real simple. It came from 8 years of being the Milwaukee County executive, where as a local official, we tried to do creative things to avoid layoffs that would not only hurt our employees but would have a negative impact on services. I knew that to balance our budget without having the kind of devastatingly negative impact they had in Illinois when they raised taxes on businesses and individuals this past year and only made their problems worse, we didn't want to do that and hurt the economy. We didn't want to see massive layoffs of public employees like other states have done. We didn't want to see cuts in things like Medicaid. In fact, Illinois is cutting down more than $1 billion or proposing to. We added more than $1 billion to Medicaid so that we could fund programs like Badger Care and Family Care. We certainly said we didn't want to go about using the kind of budget tricks and gimmicks that the state of Wisconsin had used in the past because that's what got us in trouble in the first place. So we avoided all those poor decisions and instead put in place long-term structure reforms that most importantly help us not just balance this year's budget, but help us at both the state and at the local level balance and control our budgets for years to come, which is one of the big problems we had in the past, and I saw it firsthand for 8 years as a local elected official.
Right, but to clarify, Governor Walker, while you did speak about increased contributions from public employees to health care and pensions, you didn't specifically say, I want to restrict collective bargaining rights for public employees.
Well, I thought that the convention of State Education Convention, I talked about wanting to make changes to collective bargaining and mediation arbitration, expressing the frustration there. It was in front of 1,000 school board members, superintendents, other school officials. In fact, Mike Lowe, when I spoke to the convention earlier this year, one of the reporters from Fox 6, I remember ran the story saying, yeah, I remember, I was there. He did talk about that and pointed out that, you know, these were the sorts of options on the table. From our standpoint, the answer was real simple. If we were going to make those sorts of changes in the budget to balance a $3.6 billion budget deficit, if we were going to empower school districts, give you a good example, and this is something that not even in the election, but even in January and February last year, you know, people ask, you know, any regrets, anything you would have done differently? I said, absolutely. Any of us who are honest about whether it's in politics or business or life in general, if you're honest about things, you go back and you assess things and you figure out what could you do better. in my case, it's real simple. Last January and February, I should have spent more time, instead of just referring in to fix the problem, instead of I should have spent more time explaining what I perceive the problem to be in this state. Unlike most in politics, I fixed it and explained it. Most people talk about it and explain it but never fix it. So I guess between the two, I'd rather fix it. But I think the mistake I made was in January and February, I should have spent more time talking about the problems. Good example is if I'd said last year, if I'd given the facts up front and said, do you know that most school districts across the state of Wisconsin, most of them have to buy their health insurance from just one company. The company just happened to be affiliated with the teachers union. And because of that, they're spending tens of millions of dollars more than they have to because of that process. People would have said, Governor, you need to fix that. And if I'd pointed out that overtime abuses at the state and local level, cost us tens of millions of dollars in law scenarios where a city bus driver in Madison can make $150,000, people would have said, you got to fix that. But instead, we fixed it up front. Now, schools, the good news is off of that, part of the reason why so many school districts have not only preserved teaching positions, but have held or lowered their tax levy and been able to keep their programs intact is because of things like vetting out their health insurance, which have saved districts all across Wisconsin tens of millions of dollars. Those are things, without a doubt, we could explain more in detail. But the reality is, I said I was going to balance the budget. I was going to do it without raising taxes. I said I was going to do it without cutting core services directly and instead give people the options to be able, or the tools they needed, the reforms they needed to fix things. And without using the kind of budget gimmicks that we're using the best, that's what we did. People sometimes mistakenly, I think that it's a yes or no proposition. In our case, we had a deficit, just like nearly every state across America. The question wasn't, do you do what we did or do you do nothing at all? Because that wasn't an option. You can't balance the budget doing nothing at all. So other states raised taxes. Some states had massive layoffs of public employees. Other states cut things like Medicaid, and other states used budget tricks and gimmicks. We took all those options off the table because we didn't think they were good for the people of Wisconsin, and instead picked an option that provides long-term structural reform, again, not just to the state government, but to every one of the 424 school districts that have to use it, to 72 counties, to the more than 1,700 municipalities. And that's why overwhelmingly, even those local officials were reluctant to begin with when this first came up, I think you find an overwhelming opposition to repealing that right now, because they understand now that they're the ones driving their own destiny, that they're the ones who are duly elected by the taxpayers of their jurisdiction, and they get to actually make the decisions and not leave it to someone else because of the state law that forced that on them.
Governor Walker, Milwaukee Mayor Tom Barrett, one of your potential opponents, has said that you plan to make Wisconsin a right-to-work state. Now, your spokesperson said you have no plans for doing such a thing, but no plans to some sounds a little bit vague. If the legislature would send you a bill that would make Wisconsin a right-to-work state, would you sign it or would you veto it?
That's not even going to get there. People have asked me in the past in the legislature, and we've said I have no interest in a right-to-work law in the state. We're not going to pursue that in the remainder of our term, and we're not going to pursue it in the future. The reason is private sector unions overwhelmingly are my partner in economic development. It's why we've had numerous stops that I made at factories and other businesses like that around the state where we have support from private sector unions, and particularly from the members of private sector unions, because they understand, they're taxpayers as well, that we need to make these changes to make sure the state can continue to put more people to work. But I've worked with people like the head of the operating engineers. And on the mining bill, we worked with not only operating engineers, but the carpenters union and others out there. They're our partners in economic development. We work together on the mining bill. We're going to continue to work together on bills like that to put more people to work in the state. I have no interest in pursuing that. For us, the reason we made these changes when it comes to the public sector is simple. We needed to be able to be in a position to balance not just our state, but be in a position when the biggest piece of our budget is aid to local government. We knew if you're going to balance the budget, and that means reductions in what the state spends in those areas, you have to be able to give those local governments the tools to balance their budgets. And if you didn't make the changes we made, you'd have this patchwork of some places where they got agreements and others where they didn't. and you have a horrible, just horrible gap between some that were able to use reforms to balance their budget and others that did not. I mean, you know, it's interesting. The mayor talks about this and ignores the fact that he used my reforms to save taxpayers in the city of Milwaukee $25 million. That more than offset for the changes made in terms of the state budget. Had he not had that, he'd be in a real pickle. And the irony is he wants to go back to a system that would put mayors like him, not just in big cities, but small towns and everywhere in between, as well as schools and counties and towns and villages, in a real mess in the future if they didn't have that kind of flexibility and reform out there. So it's a stark contrast. It's interesting. He and Kathleen Falk both in the past couple of weeks have talked about wanting to restore collective bargaining. What they fail to point out is that that's not just going to be something where there's a snap of a finger. That's going to be a protracted year-long or more battle, which you'll see all the same things that we saw over the past year in Madison. People coming in on both sides of the issue, all sorts of tension about that. I don't think the vast majority of voters in the state of Wisconsin want to relive that. They want to move on. I mean, even for people who are extremely supportive, they like the fact that people are willing to take on these tough challenges, but I don't think anybody wants to see that happen all over again, and that's exactly what they're talking about. On top of that, you've got Tom Barron and Kathleen Falk both saying that they want to lift the caps on property taxes, caps that brought us for the first time in 12 years an actual reduction in property taxes. The taxes on a median-valued home went down for the first time in 12 years after dramatic increases in property taxes in the past. I think if you're listening right now and you're a senior citizen living in your home who's concerned about being able to stay there, or if you're a working family where you're struggling to make ends meet just to pay the bills, the last thing you want is somebody who said they're going to lift the caps on property taxes, which that combined with restoring collective bargaining for public employees will just blow the lid off.
Let me hold you there, Governor Walker. I was very late on that break, Governor Walker. I'm sorry. Sure, we have just less than a minute. What is Wisconsin's future if voters don't choose you to finish your term?
Well, I think we go back to the days that we're seeing going on right now in Illinois. I mean, Illinois, massive tax increases, bond rates the worst in the country, unemployment rates 2 points higher than Wisconsin, cuts in Medicaid, cuts in state facilities and public employees. I think that's going backwards. I think that's a step backwards for the state of Wisconsin. I think it's time for us to take the positive foundation we built together, move Wisconsin forward, put our people back to work, and bring our state together.